armchair.
There's something, I'll say there's something kind of about a kid that's never played baseball.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and flat out deceived.
Why did you get so drunk?
You got drunk. I'm just really exhausted.
What's in that cup?
Rum and Cokes.
Do you have any idea how important
you
this is?
Have
try
any
to
any
save
idea?
The pump up. Really, this is what you're doing? This is what you're doing?
Chief, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night. Try to take over the world.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Armchair.
YouTube Live.
Radio Station.
The radio station you can call your own. Listeners like about our station?
I like everything.
It's always on my radio.
We never stop the music, except for now, when I talk.
You're listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. We're here live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country, your first choice for Southern sports. Good afternoon. I'm Mac McGee, and I don't know much, but I know one thing. Mike Soroka is back on the mound. Good Lord, that's pre-pandemic baseball talk.
Armchair.
Community Access Channel.
He's the armchair quarterback. He's full of beer and he's full of snacks. He's the All-American.
Hey, howdy, hi, and how the hell are you? I am doing great, my friends. We got a lot to get into and a little time to do it today. Justin's on the way. We're going to be making National League East predictions. You know, we're hitting every division, and today we thought it would be the best time to go ahead and hit the National League East predictions, as Justin won't be here next week. We've already done the American League East. We've done the American League Central, kind of bouncing around. Next week, we're going to be doing pretty much all going in on giving our playoff predictions, World Series predictions, all that kind of stuff, because opening day is a week from tomorrow. You can see the score right over my shoulder if you're watching on YouTube. Braves lead it right now, 5-3. Mike Soroka pitched today. And look, it's the first time Mike Soroka has pitched in many moons, right? He got hurt in 2020 and could never get back. And we hope to see him on a major league stage in the regular season this year. But it's just good to see him come out and pitch. He pitched okay today. It wasn't anything that, you know, that you're going to blow out of proportion, start talking about, okay, well, he's done, or you're going to sit there and say he's headed to the Cy Young this year. But I thought he pitched okay. And you look at the fact that the last time he pitched was 2020, and he only pitched in three games. And of course, everybody, well, most Braves fans remember that he hurt his Achilles coming off the mound. There was a play in the first inning very similar to that, and I just held my breath. Thankfully, he was fine. He went over there. It almost felt like I'd be interested to see and hear what he has to say about it. But it had to have gone through his mind, because it was almost like he was cautiously, not gingerly, but cautiously going off the mound after once he got the ball. He barely got the runner out, but he did get the runner out by about a half step. But what are we expecting from Mike Soroka? Remember, the last time he actually pitched in an actual full season, he finished second in the National League MVP, Rookie of the Year voting. He finished sixth in Cy Young voting when he was still officially a rookie. 174 innings, 142 strikeouts, and the biggest thing to me, an ERA of 2.68, and his WHIP was 1.11. He's always averaged around 7 to 7.5 strikeouts per nine. And I think what we could hope for this year is to get north of 100 innings from him and an ERA below 4, somewhere between 3 and 4. And I think we would look
look at that as a fantastic season. I don't know if he's someone you want to go all in if you're thinking about your fantasy baseball league, but I'm talking about real baseball, the Atlanta Braves winning games. The best guess would be Soroka will be ready to come out and pitch in a big league action on real games that count. Probably, I would think May. I know I've seen some reports where they're talking about best case scenario would be late April. You got to figure that they're going to be very cautious going on the future front for Mike Soroka. And the last thing they want to do is rush him. And then we get another injury and then you get another pushback. So Mike Soroka comes in today. And by the way, they're in Lakeland playing the Tigers. And if I would have known that this was the game that he was coming back, we would have done the game today. But it was all hush-hush until a few days ago, and we'd already made the plans tomorrow. If you don't know what I'm talking about, tomorrow we're bringing you Braves, Mets, 105 first pitch. WQEE is going to pick it up at 2 p.m., so you'll get the bulk of the action. But if you do want to catch the whole thing, it's on Braves Country HD on YouTube. Going over what happened today real quick. And you know, we're going to get deep into the weeds on a spring training game, but Soroka today, 1 2/3, they had a inning, a pitch count limit for him. 1 2/3, gave up one earned run, three hits, one strikeout. The Tigers scored two runs in the innings that he was on, but one of them ended up being unearned because of the error at second base. The other big thing that I think a lot of folks are really starting to stress about, and I don't blame you, is what in the world are they going to do at shortstop? Because at shortstop, right now, in case you've been under a rock somewhere and haven't seen the news over the last 24 to 48 hours, Vaughn Grissom and Shoemake have been sent down. And I don't think that's going to change by opening day. What it looks like is that Shoemake and Grissom are both going to play down in the minors. Grissom's going to get work at both second and short because they want to keep him fresh for both. And outside of that, what you're looking at is Arcia is going to be the big league shortstop. And right now, unless a move is made, and we'll see, you never know with Anthopoulos. But unless a move is made before opening day, he'll be our starting shortstop. And I don't think there's any problem with that. Orlando Arcia plays phenomenal when he gets a chance to play. So we'll be fine there. And we know we can count on his defense. And he gets hot from time to time at the plate. Look, let's be honest. Arcia is probably going to be at the bottom of the order. If I was sketching it out right now, Arcia would probably be my number nine hitter. I think the most disconcerting thing is that depending on who the starter is each day, your left fielder and DH could be your 7 and 8 hitter. And that's not necessarily what you want for a team that's going to be contending to not just win the National League East, but to go deep into the playoffs and win a second World Series in 3 years. But there's a lot of time to figure out who's playing well, who we're going to roll with. Are they going to do what I kind of predicted at the beginning of the winter, or middle of the winter, I guess, but at the beginning of this season or this calendar year, is it assuming that they're playing well and they don't work themselves off the team, and I don't think they've done anything so far to do that. I kind of expect Rosario to be in left field versus right-handers and Ozuna to be in left field versus left-handers. And then you're going to have them sprinkled both in at the designated hitter role, but you got to keep in mind Darnold and Murphy getting them enough at bats. And as far as behind the plate, you have to expect that the Atlanta Braves are going to keep, they're going to give Murphy the bulk of the load behind the plate, but it'll be pretty close to a split. You play 162 games, assuming nobody gets injured. I think you're looking at somewhere around a 90-70 split. You could see 162 type split, but I think it's more likely that they don't, because they want to, not only do they want to keep Darnold fresh and keep him happy. They want to keep his at-bats. And you also want to keep Murphy, who you just locked up long-term, very healthy. You want to wear him out. And there was another thing that I saw today that I found very interesting. I was just kind of curious, and this is baseball related, but it's a little in the weeds with the numbers, fantasy baseball type nerd stuff, right? But I was curious what catchers average the most points, and we're talking about points, we're talking about base hits and doubles, singles, RBIs, et cetera, et cetera. What catcher averaged the most points over the long haul last year? And it's a very short sample size. I get that. But the catcher in Major League Baseball that averaged the most points per at bat was Chadwick Tromp. Now, we know it was a very short sample size, but if you remember, he was looking really good, and then he got hurt. And it was a shame, and then the next thing you know, the direction changed, and they ended up keeping him down as he rehabilitated himself. But that's a third catching option that I think could be a very real option this year if anything, God forbid, happens to Darnold or Murphy, even if it's short term, they got to put them all on the 15 IL. Tromp is someone that they should be able to lean on, and he's going to get plenty of at bats down on the farm. So the Braves catching situation is top notch. I think all in all, if you look at it objectively, they're not in trouble at the shortstop position at all. We're a little nervous because we're coming off of a year where Dansby Swanson had a career-type year, and he cashed in. He went to Chicago. He took the $177 million and ran. I mean, can you blame the guy? Can you blame a guy when he was going to end up, if you compared it to what he was going to get from Atlanta, probably close to a third more of the contract? The Cubs overpaid. They would probably tell you in confidence that they know they overpaid because they were trying to build something in Chicago. And one of the things they're trying to build in Chicago is not just a winner, but they're trying to bring in clubhouse guys, and Dansby Swanson is a clubhouse guy. But I think the future is extremely bright at short. I do believe it will be Vaughn Grissom long-term, but you might see a situation this year where he's having a hard time picking it up defensively, and Shoemake comes up and platoons alongside Arcia. If everything was normal and they thought that this was not a fluke, I think Shoemake makes the team. But what they're looking at right now is, was this a fluke that Shoemake hit so well in the spring because he's not facing the top pitchers every time, especially when Shoemake comes into the game most of the time, and that's why you saw him get so many at-bats at starts over the last, what was it about, it was close to a 10-day stretch, was they wanted to see what he could do against Major League Baseball pitchers and not just the guys who are going to end up down on the farm for various clubs. If everything was even and he did this last year and he's doing it again this year, Shoemake would have been on the opening day roster. May not have been the opening day starter. They still may have gave it to Arcia, but that is what they would have done. But you've got to put Shoemake back down there because they're being cautious for a couple of reasons. One of the big reasons, I believe, is because they want to make sure, let's say it's 3-4 weeks into the season, and either Arcia is not playing that well, or let's be honest, Adrianza has had a lot of opportunities, and let's say he's not cashing in on his opportunities off the bench. At that point, you may see Shoemake come up. Or if Grissom is showing that he can pick it at short down there, and I really just think the kid needs time. They really threw him into this. It's still in the developmental process. Then you could see Grissom. But do I think Orlando Arcia is our everyday shortstop past the all-star break going into like to the trading deadline? Probably not. But Arcia is also playing for an opportunity to maybe cash in on a big contract because he's at the end of his road with Atlanta. And just by looking at the pure common sense of it, Atlanta's probably not bringing him back unless it's an extremely club friendly deal and they've ended up moving somebody else. So he's going to be extremely motivated to go out and perform every single day. And if you're not watching us on YouTube and you're riding down the road listening to the radio, the Braves do lead at 5-3 over the Detroit Tigers. I think the most positive thing from Soroka today was he struck out Torkelson. That may not sound like a big deal to folks who don't follow the Tigers, American League Baseball. Spencer Torkelson is probably going to be the cleanup hitter for the Tigers. If he's not the cleanup hitter, he's going to be somewhere in that fifth, sixth, maybe even seventh role. He's a young kid, and they are high on this kid. And he struck out on a nasty slider. The biggest thing that we saw with Soroka was he was bouncing pitches up there. But the gas is definitely there. And I think that Soroka will eventually work his way back into the rotation. It's just, you got to expect it if you're Braves country, that for very good reason, they don't want to rush this. Because the last thing you want to do is have on your head, if you're one of the trainers, if you're one of the coaches down there, if you're in the front office, if you're in Thopolis, you don't want to have to answer questions yet again in about 3 weeks of why you're shutting him down and you're not getting any production from him. So the long-term goal is for him to be that number five guy this year. And, of course, you can't predict any of these guys' health. Right now we're sitting here talking about, man, there's a logjam for that fifth position, and isn't it great to be an Atlanta Brave? But typically, a GM, a coach will tell you, a manager will tell you, you need to go around 11 deep in your starting rotation to make it through a 162-game season. And then let's also add the playoffs. So when you add the postseason, you could be talking closer to 12 or 13 because guys wear down, guys get injured. The infamous dead arm term that we always hear. So that's where we're sitting at. And as far as left field, we're going to get more of an idea as Rosario makes his way back to the team. Remember, he was in the WBC as well as a lot of other guys, and most of these guys are more likely to start playing. Essentially, tomorrow is the day you'll start seeing these guys play a lot, especially the home games, because when they are in the home games, you're not having to travel on a bus, and B, you feel like that you have more access to the facilities. That's why tomorrow's game that we're doing, 105 first pitch, that game is against the Mets. That was the number one reason why we picked it. But the other thing was we're a week away from opening day and it's at home. And you got to figure today we didn't see a lot of the starters play. Tomorrow you're going to see them play. And so we're excited about that. All right, let's take a really quick break. When we come back, we got more to talk about in the world of sports, some baseball talk, and a lot of things going on. We are 8 days away from opening day, and we're doing the National League East predictions today. We'll be back in a flash here on Braves Country and Braves Country HD, wherever you stream.
Now there's a steal by Bird. Underneath the DJ, lays it in.
Here's good news. There's still a need for hundreds of thousands of cybersecurity professionals in the U.S. right now. And My Computer Career is training people to help meet the demand. No IT experience? No problem. Take the free career evaluation today. Start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. Grants covering up to 53% of the cost are available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu.
ACC football covered like no other here on the Armchair Quarterbacks.
Out of the shotgun, third down and about 10. Ward getting some pressure, getting more, gets it away. He's got Pryor wide open. Touchdown, Florida State. That's what Ward will do to you.
Georgia Tech 45, Nebraska 21. It's now up to the voters. They look like the number one, don't they?
All right, 6 seconds to go. Mahler throws it up for grabs. There's five defenders back there. Game runs out. And Clemson wins the national championship of college football.
This is for the national championship for Nebraska.
Incomplete.
And
Hurricanes from Miami, an absolutely miracle year, the dream season as they come back from a bad loss opening day to go to 11 straight wins and in all probability when the votes are in, a first ever national championship for the Hurricanes.
Take the scenic route in the new Hyundai Santa Fe, the family SUV with available H-Track all-wheel drive to help you travel way off the beaten path. Find new adventures together in the Hyundai Santa Fe.
Welcome back to Braves Country. Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks, weekdays, 3 to 5 p.m., drive time on WQEE.
Yo, you don't even know what stupid is! It's about to get all stupid up in here!
Unoriginal Melody.
Welcome back!
Why did John Lennon have to be the one to get shot? Something's wrong.
Braves lead it 5-3. And got a question from Kenneth, so we're going to go ahead and hit that real quick. Talking about, says, how about the Braves bench going for the whole season? I'm assuming what you mean is who do I expect to be on the Braves bench for the entire season? I think, well, you got to realize they're going to carry 13 pitchers because that's the limit. That's all you can carry. And a lot of these general managers and coaches, they would love to carry 16 pitchers and just rifle hitters up and down from a triple A. But you're going to have a four-man bench, essentially. And I believe that's what the question is saying, when it says, how about the Braves bench going for the whole season? One of the bench positions automatically goes to Travis d'Arnaud. Murphy's the starting catcher-ish, and then after that, it's Murphy's on the bench when Travis d'Arnaud's going to be hitting or starting. And you're going to have both those guys DHing. So I kind of pencil them as the DH as well. Now, I think the difference would be, let's say if you have a night game followed by a day game, that day game, the catcher that caught the night before probably doesn't DH because they're not going to wear a guy down in the middle of April or May just to get four at-bats, right? So the catcher's obviously going to be one of the bench slots in Murphy and d'Arnaud. I don't think they would carry a third catcher. They don't currently have one on the roster. So Tromp is that emergency guy down at the farm. After that, what it looks like is that Adrianza is going to be given a chance to make the roster as the utility guy. Because the one thing about Adrianza that I do like, you hate his stick. His stick has been terrible. Well, actually, I'll tell you what, there's three positives about Adrianza. First of all, they love him in the clubhouse. And you can't really quantify that. So he gets along. He's been there on and off for the last few years. Everybody loves him. So you like that, you know he's going to get along. You know he's not going to gripe about getting base at plate appearances. So you love that. He's got speed, and he's pretty reliable with the glove, and he can play so many different positions. So it's nice to have a utility knife, which, you know, essentially that's what Arcia was going to be sitting on our bench. Had Grissom grabbed the starting role, Arcia would have been our utility knife. He just doesn't have the speed. Instead, Arcia is going to be the starter going into the season. And then you're going to have most likely Adrianza. So then you got two more slots. And one of them appears to be going to Marcell Ozuna. And this is assuming that Rosario is your starting left fielder. Ozuna is the backup / DH. It'll be a rotation between Rosario, Ozuna, and d'Arnaud coming in and out of the DH position, along with Murphy when he's not behind the plate. So after that, I think you have to assume at this point, if they don't take, let's say they decide not to keep Adrianza, I think that would make it really difficult to navigate through the first part of the season, because if you have an injury, what do you do at shortstop? Sam Hilliard is out of options. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of folks believe that he was going to be making the team. But I think Kevin Pillar's made a very strong argument for that. So at this point, that if it's me, and I know that they've already decided that they're going to keep Ozuna and give him a chance, and his bat has heated up. That's the one thing that you can say about Ozuna. I know that all the negatives off the field. And on the field, he hasn't been that great the past couple seasons. He also played off and on. Maybe that's got something to do with it. But they're paying the guy $16 million a year, and that's got a lot to do with why he's going to get a chance. So he's going to get that chance. If he doesn't perform, he's probably the first on the chopping block. But if you've got Ozuna at designated hitter, and when it's not him, it's Darnold, the bench to me seems pretty clear. Let's just assume Ozuna's the DH and Darnold's the backup catcher. Then after that, you've got Darnold, Adrianza, Pillar, and there would be room for one more, and it's probably Sam Hilliard. And it gives you two outfielders. Now, that's assuming that they don't decide to go in a different direction, because as we're making cuts, so will other teams, and you never know what comes up on the trash heap. And if something ends up on the trash heap, a player just isn't working out wherever he's at, a guy like Pillar or Hilliard could be gone. But I think Pillar has done easily enough this spring, and Hilliard's actually played pretty well too. And one of the things that they liked about Hilliard was that he can play all three positions in the outfield and play him pretty well. He's not Gold Glover, but he's solid defensively. And then also the thing about Sam Hilliard, when you look at what else we have on the bench, he is going to be a lefty off the bench. And when you have Pillar or Darnold or Ozuna sitting on the bench, or even Murphy for that matter, that's a lot of righties on the bench. So Hilliard does give you that left-handed bat. And Hilliard, look, you look at his numbers and nothing's going to jump off and go, wow, this guy could do it. I mean, he hit 184 last year with what was it? Two home runs and 14 RBI. And he got 70 games in, 174 at bats. So it wasn't like he didn't have you can't go by that sample size. That's a decent sample size to say, I don't know if this guy's going to make the team. And to me, he's the first one on the chopping block. Because I think what happens when it's looked upon at the big picture of this, let's say you do decide to cut ties with Ozuna, and then someone picks him up and he starts tearing the cover off the ball, and you can say, well, I don't care because of what he's done off the field, et cetera, et cetera. And we're not going to dive into that again because there's so many layers to that on what really happened with that. I'm not going to go into that. But here's the thing. If that's why you were going to cut him, you should have done it then. So if you do it now, and now he takes off, you're going to look like a bozo. So if they were going to go out there and cut him, they would have done it right after the arrest for the domestic violence that ended up getting dropped because of all the circumstances. Or they would have done it right after the DUI. But they didn't do that. They held on to him. And so if you're going to hold on to him, and you go through all this, you go through the entire... Someone just went yard. Orlando Arcia went yard today, a 3-run shot. So I've got the live feed on, and I've got the backup feed on. Because I saw the first inning of Soroka, but I didn't get a chance to watch the whole game. So I'm watching it slowly, and then I'm keeping an eye on the live feed. So that was a 3-run bomb by Arcia. I did not realize that was today. He hit that one. So, but anyways, if you're gonna hold on to him through all this nonsense, I mean, we're talking about close to 2 years. and then you cut him loose. I just don't think that's realistic. So I think what's most likely going to happen, Ozuna's going to break with the team. He's going to get an opportunity. But if he goes out there flailing and swinging and doing that round swing that always ends up either in a strikeout, a pop out, he's probably going to find himself on the trash heap by midseason. Because at that point, you can say to yourself, look, we gave it a go. This is just a signing that didn't work out. And they do have guys down in the minors that they've already sent down that could easily come in and replace him if he's playing at a poor level. I mean, the first guy that comes to my mind is Eli White. He had a pretty darn good spring, but he had options left, and sometimes you're a victim of the numbers. So when we get closer to the middle of the summer, and not even that far, I'm going to give it to Memorial Day. When Memorial Day hits, you'll be about 60 games in. You'll have a good idea. That's about a third of the season. You're going to have an idea of what you have with Marcell Ozuna. For that matter, you're going to have an idea of what you have with Rosario. And he hasn't had any off-the-field trouble, but he didn't play well last year. And obviously, the eye surgery's got a lot to do with it. But he's now a year removed from that eye surgery, essentially. And you expect him to compete at a high level. You get it to midway through this season with Rosario, and he's not playing well. He could be another guy that gets moved one way or the other, because you'd be on the hook for a lot less money. Now, the one thing about Rosario is he does play much better defense. He's not flawless in left field by any stretch of the imagination, but he's got much more range. And at this point, he has a better arm, even though Ozuna claims that he's been working on his arm all off season. But the thing is, we haven't had a chance to even see it because he hasn't been in the field much in the spring training. See, it's going to be as much as we as fans are going to be focusing on wins and losses, and the Mets wins and losses, and the Phillies wins and losses. It's very critical that first third of the season this year for the career trajectory for Ozuna, for Rosario, and for that matter, the kids down in the minor leagues, Grissom and Shoemake. These are big, big games that they're going to be playing, and the one thing we don't get to see on a daily basis, because only the coaches who are around them see it, is their approach. And how are they going about getting themselves ready for the game? And is that, because sometimes that weighs in the balance when a coach says, man, this guy's just coming in late, et cetera, et cetera. I'd rather at least give it a chance with this guy because he's trying. So I wouldn't expect that from any of the guys that I just mentioned because they know how critical it is. But sometimes that can be a huge factor. And that's the kind of stuff. If you remember, I guess it was, was it 2021, I believe, when Javier Baez, the only reason I'm bringing him up because we are playing the Tigers today, Javier Baez was traded away from the Cubs to the Mets. One of the reasons why they said they didn't want to re-sign Baez, and this is all being rumored, et cetera, but there had to be some validity to it, was that the coaching staff in general just didn't feel like he was a good clubhouse fit. And anytime someone says that, a good clubhouse fit, that's usually just code talk for he's a jerk. So he gets traded to the Mets, and the Mets are trying to compete for a playoff spot. If you remember, the Mets meted once again, and they blew like a 5-6 game lead. The Braves were so banged up and injured. We lost Acuna that year, et cetera, et cetera. But then we made those moves, brought Peterson in, brought Soler in, Duvall, and all of a sudden the whole thing gelled. And the Braves took off. They passed the Mets. The rest is history. Win the World Series. But in the background of that season that a lot of folks were not paying attention to, Baez was coming up at the end of his contract, and he's besties with Lindor. They're buddy-buddy, just like Lindor. I don't know. Lindor's like a 12-year-old. He's got like 35 best friends. But anyways, because he claims that Correa is his best friend, but then that year it was Baez. But anyways, Baez and him were buddy-buddy, and there was all this nonsense going on. And the way he acted going down the stretch is why Steve Cohen, who could have easily cut a check to hold on to him, he said, bye-bye, and the Tigers picked him up. And I guarantee you that, you know, the Tigers are regretting it. I said it when it happened. I thought it was a foolish signing by Detroit. You don't have a lot of money, and when you do bring money in, you better make sure it's a guy who's going to not just perform on the field, but he's got to be a leader. That's what the Cubs did. The Cubs weren't planning on making a big splash this offseason. They're kind of building cornerstones. And the big cornerstone that they put in the field every day was Dansby Swanson. And that's not what the Tigers added on. They added on Baez, who's never been a leader, though the talent's always been there. A lot of the talk has always been that he's never been that committed to, you know, it's a grind going up there every single day. 162 games, and it's not just the at-bats that you're getting, but it's also the preparation for those at-bats. And are you doing the film work in between the at-bats? Are you rushing down there to try to see what you can do better, talking to the coaches? And so that kind of stuff there plays into this as well on whether or not the Braves, I guarantee you this, if somehow these guys make it through this season, they're still on the seat at the end of the year, when we go into next year, there won't be that long leash. If Ozuna had another year, we only hit 20 home runs and barely hit his weight, he just won't be on the team. He'll either be cut in the middle of this season, or they'll let go of him in the offseason and just say it is what it is. What they would love to do is trade him. But how do you trade something nobody wants? And everybody just wants to go, oh, we'll just trade them. Just because they let you do it on MLB The Show because you got certain ratings on there doesn't mean you can do it in real life. And most GMs are not going to take on a $16 million contract from a guy that couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat last year. Because if you remember those home runs he hit, the bulk of them were in the beginning of the season. And then it came down to where he either struck out 3-4 times in a game, or maybe he got one home run, and that's about all he did. It was usually a worthless home run. It's usually a solo shot in a game that was out of reach one way or the other. All right, let's take another break. When we come back, we are going to talk about what the WBC meant for baseball, what they were trying to get to do. Justin is on the way. He is going to be here in just a moment, as we're going to be giving you NL East predictions. And this goofy thing, what is Cam Newton talking about? I mean, seriously, what? I mean, did y'all hear this? What is Cam Newton talking about? We'll be back in a flash.
It's the best in sports and entertainment. And get locked in and locked down with Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. with your host, me, Ryan O'Neill, each and every morning right here with the best in sports and entertainment, all the way from professional sports to college sports to River Dragons hockey and everything in between, including some of the very best local and national guests. It's the Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, right here on 99.1 FM WQEE.
Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, it's Braves versus Mets right here on Braves Country HD. The Atlanta Braves spring training is winding down, and important roster spots will be decided. Make sure to drop in and catch Braves Country spring training baseball right here on Braves Country HD, wherever you stream. Like and subscribe today. We're bringing you over 100 broadcasts in total in every game throughout the playoffs. That's Braves Mets, Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Braves Country HD.
Having somebody making wild decisions that make no sense, that benefits nobody.
Oh, yes, right, yes.
Is he listening to us? I can't tell.
He's listening. He's not understanding. Yeah, he doesn't even, like, get us, man. We're talking about you.
Big news and the big games covered in the Big Ten.
by the armchair quarterbacks all year long.
Third down and about 22. As Smith drops the ball, he's got his tight end.
Open, but he's got Connor downfield, and he's gone. Michigan leads the game with a first touchdown and a bullet, a bomb. The Carter, 71 yards.
Now State's lead, 7-3.
There he goes. So long. Ohio State, touchdown.
That's that old 1-2 punch you make to him the first time, and then have it a second time.
In his career, Lorenzo White, 15 times, rushed for 100 yards in a half. Five of those this season. On second and 10.
Long, long throw to Rison, and he's open. All the way to the six-yard line.
Big Ten football covered in the Southeast by the armchair quarterbacks.
Hockey season, and that means new merch over at ourdragonsmerch.com. Get the latest designs and some of our fun new souvenirs ahead of what's sure to be a great hockey season. Celebrate another season of River Dragons hockey by getting a new look to wear on game days, or surprise the big-time sports fan in your life with a new keepsake that will make them a River Dragons fan for life. Order online right now at ourdragonsmerch.com. That's the letter R, dragonsmerch.com. We'll see you at the rink.
Welcome back. A couple of news items that have just popped up. Number one, Paul George is, they're saying that it's going to, if you miss it last night, he had a really bad looking injury where his knee went two different directions. And I was assuming that they were going to announce that, you know, I mean, look, all the reports last night was that he was done for the year. Now they're saying sprained right knee and will be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks. And I mean, that puts you towards the end of the regular season. There's a chance he could possibly be back this year. But I think when you say reevaluated, that doesn't make it sound like to me that he's going to be back in 2 or 3 weeks. So are they debating on whether or not he's going to need some kind of surgery, or are they debating whether or not, because normally a sprained knee in basketball terms is usually, 4 to 6 weeks bare minimum. So we'll see what happens with that. The other thing that was announced a little while ago, Mecole Hardman, the wide receiver that had been on the Chiefs since his career began, he has signed a 1-year deal with the New York Jets. Yes, it is a 1-year deal with the New York Jets. So what does that mean? T leaves Aaron Rodgers? Don't know. Because I know he has his wish list. But Hardman coming over, I mean, I don't know why he would think that's a bad thing. And of course, Hardman, we all remember him, University of Georgia star, but he's been with Kansas City. I mean, this got to be about it. What is this? His fifth? Yeah. It will be his fifth year. So Hardman on to the Jets. I was gonna look at the NBA standings to see where we sit. But with this news with George, that's really, really murky. I'm just going to punt that, because the one thing I will say about the NBA West, and that's back to baseball talk, it's the most wide open that I can ever remember it. I still would probably hedge and say, you're going to have to beat the Warriors, and that's going to be a tall task. And Ja Morant, they're saying, could return tonight with the Rockets. He did practice yesterday. So, but what kind of mental state is that kid in? So I can't even take the Grizzlies serious, because unless he's all in and focused,
how in the world can you even try to handicap the race out in the West? 2 months ago, we would have been talking about Memphis being a real contender to not just possibly get to the conference championship, but maybe win the whole thing. You look at what Denver's done. They've been playing really blasé until their last game. They had lost like, what, four out of their last six? Phoenix is dealing with the Kevin Durant injury. And here come the Warriors slowly. But it's about as slow as you can get because they went on a little bit of a run, but they've lost four of their last 10. The hottest team that's currently in the NBA standings right now is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't think they're scaring anybody. And then you got the Lakers on the outside looking in. I think the East in the NBA is much more clear. I still think it's realistically a 3, maybe 4 team race. It's the Bucks, it's the Celtics, and the 76ers with an asterisk because I'm just not a believer in the 76ers to go through the gauntlet of the NBA playoffs. Embiid gets injured way too much. And then the fourth team I would throw in there is going to be the winner of that Cleveland-New York series. Assuming that's how it filters out, but I think that's how it's going to filter out because the Nets can continue to kind of to tread water, so they're not leapfrogging anybody. I don't think the Heat are going to be able to catch the Knicks or the Cavs, and I don't believe the Cavs are going to get hot enough to catch the Sixers. So you're the 4-5 right now is Cleveland, New York. You've only got about, depending on the team, about 9 games left. And just to give you an idea, the Cavs are 3.5 games behind the Sixers, but they're 3.5 games in front of the Knicks. And the Knicks are 2.5 in front of the Nets. So I feel like it's going to be New York versus Cleveland that first round. That's going to be a very good series. And the Knicks have played good basketball over the last couple of months, but I would still say it's going to be Cleveland. And I don't take Philadelphia as a serious threat to knock out Boston in a 7-game series. And I don't realistically think the Cleveland-New York winner can knock out the Bucks. It's probably going to be Bucks-Celtics again in the East. And in the West, you're talking about the Nuggets, the Suns, if KD can come back, the Warriors, and then the one wild card this entire, well, I guess there's two. If John Morant can get his head straight. But I'm still looking at the Sacramento Kings as that dark horse that a lot of folks, no one's talking about them. They really don't play in that big of a market. Though they're in California, they're in Sacramento, and they really haven't been much of a team. By the way, it is a final. The Braves beat the Tigers 5-3. So we'll probably dive much more into the NBA as we get a little closer. There's so much going on with the opening day coming up, and then you got the March Madness. We're going to talk some SEC hoops next hour when Justin jumps on. Tonight, by the way, there's 2 NIT games, and if anyone who's been watching this show, listening to the show, knows how I've been on this bandwagon, and I know a lot of folks are expecting them to get beat tonight. I'm going to ride with Vandy again tonight. That's going to be my lock. I'm taking the Commodores. I'll go ahead and tell you now. I'm taking the Commodores as my lock tonight. Cincinnati's also playing. Those games, 7 o'clock, and I believe the second one is either 9 or not. Let's see. Yeah, 9. So a lot of folks believe Utah Valley is going to take out Cincinnati in Cincinnati. Utah Valley's a good team. I've watched them play all year long, but they are on the road, so that's a problem. Vandy's at home against UAB, and the biggest problem Vanderbilt's going to have is on the glass with UAB, and that's usually concerning. But they're at home once again, and that is a really – it's a niche that they have, that home court advantage. And if you watch the Vanderbilt-Michigan game, And I'm sure a lot of people are like, what am I doing watching Vanderbilt, Michigan in the middle of March Madness? I don't know. I was watching it and I thought they were dead in the water. I'd given up. I'd crumple up the ticket that I had that I'd bet for on Vandy. And all of a sudden, here come a couple of turnovers and a big shot. And you're like, there. So you're telling me there's a chance. And here came Vandy. Until I see him get knocked out, I'm not betting against Vandy. Now, what I'm more likely to do in the big picture tonight, I'm probably likely to take Vanderbilt and Cincinnati in a teaser. You get the home team and you get 5 points and 5.5 points respectively. I like my odds. But in the world of sports, that's about it going on tonight. Now, you do have some games on the ice. I'd say probably, to me, the most intriguing one would be Florida hosting the Maple Leafs, but never mind. The Rangers are at the Hurricanes. That's a big one. That is a big one. So Rangers are at the Hurricanes tonight. That's a 7:07 puck drop. That is tonight. Nope, never mind. That's tomorrow night. So tonight, all you've got is, I guess, Penguins Avalanche. I'd slid right by the. There's only a couple of games on tonight in the ice. In the NBA, I know I've said this a million times, but the NBA regular season, I can't bet on it because they don't show up. They do too much load management. Even in games where they play, you end up seeing them take possessions off. I can't personally bet on a sport that I feel like it's not fixed. They just don't care about the regular season. But as far as your big games there, you've got is there even a big game? I guess Golden State Mavericks is the most intriguing game. The Knicks are at the Heat tonight. The Hawks are getting 5 at the Timberwolves. A team like the Hawks that's still playing for something, I could get on board possibly betting them. I haven't looked at the numbers. But I really do reserve my NBA betting to once we get to the postseason. When I know guys aren't going to be taking, I mean, you'll watch them. They take entire possessions off. They just kind of walk around, let a guy to shoot the shot. It's not quite the ridiculousness that we see in the NBA All-Star game, but it's bad. You wonder sometimes, like, what in the world's going on? By the way, real quick, I do want to play this clip before we have to hit the break. Rick Pitino made this comment about getting hired with the St. John's, and I got a prediction for this.
I said that Iona was going to be my last job. And the reason I said that is, who's going to hire a 70-year-old? No matter how much I think I'm Peter Pan, who's going to hire a 70-year-old?
Good fortune to take 3 different schools to a Final Four. John Calipari has also taken 3 different schools with only 2 people. And I want to take St. John's to another Final Four so I can get rid of Calipari off my resume.
I don't know if you can find this on a future bet, but I'm going to guarantee something right now. Within the next 3 years, and it'll probably be quicker than that because of the NIL and transfers and whatnot, St. John's and Rick Pitino are going to be in the Final Four. He's going to build something right there in New York City. He's got an opportunity. We got to take a quick break at the top of the hour. When we come back, Justin joins us, and we're going to talk some Braves baseball and all these predictions next. You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia.
Armchair.
You're listening to the Armchair Quarterback Sports Radio, number one sports station.
Good afternoon, and this is your Armchair Quarterback's Sports Flash. Tonight on the hardwood, doubleheader of the NIT quarterfinals, we'll give you the updated lines and a preview with our locks during the show. Wednesday night in the association, doubleheader on ESPN. Warriors at the Mavs, tip-off at 7:30 Eastern, and the Suns are in LA to face the Clippers at 10. Your Atlanta Hawks are in Minnesota to face the Timberwolves at 8 o'clock. And the 76ers and Bulls are at it again at 8. Trailblazers are in Utah to face the Jazz. Spring training, your Atlanta Braves in Lakeland, Florida
they travel to the Detroit Tigers facility. We'll keep you up to date on all the action and the score as the show rolls along. Other early action in the Grapefruit League, Astros at the Mets. The Yankees and Nats are squaring off in Palm Beach. Phillies travel to St. Pete to face the Rays. Orioles and Blue Jays, Cards and Marlins, all out in the Cactus League, starting at 4 Eastern. Cubs are at the A's, Rangers and Giants, and a 6:05 first pitch for the Red Sox and Twins in Fort Myers. But the Dodgers and Mariners are at it in Peoria, Arizona. Just a couple of games on the ice tonight, a TNT doubleheader. Your hump day action, Penguins and Avs at 8 Eastern. In the late drop, Coyotes at Oilers. Major League Baseball is making slight changes to its new pitch clock rules, but will not affect or alter the most significant portions of the mandates that have shaved approximately 25 minutes off of each game. The document, the fifth of its kind this spring, is known as Clarification Memos. MLB, which has control over on-field rules, will continue with the parameters of the pitch clock the players have been using all spring. 15 seconds with the bases empty, 20 seconds with runners on base, along with the hitter needing to be alert in the batter's box with 8 seconds remaining. Here are the outlines of those clarifications. On malfunctions of the PitchCom units that allow the pitcher and catcher to communicate, players will immediately inform umpires who can grant time. New standards will be enforced for bat boys and bat girls whose ability to quickly retrieve equipment will help efforts to speed up the game. According to the memo, the league will evaluate performances of bat boys and bat girls and could ask teams to replace them if their performance is considered substandard. On brushback pitches and big swings, which either knock equipment off or out of place or land a pitcher in a compromised spot on the ground, umpires can delay the start of the clock, and if the clock operator starts it early, have the ability to wave off the timer. In situations where pitchers find themselves away from the mound, whether to cover first base or back up home or third base, etc., the 30-second between batters clock will be delayed. It restarts when the pitcher, making a play at first, is on the infield grass. Leniency for catchers who end an inning on base or at bat. Umpires could turn off the 2 minutes and 30-second between inning clock at the 30-second mark if the catcher has made a reasonable effort to abide by the timer. If it reaches that point, a catcher will be allowed to receive one warm-up pitch from the pitcher and throw down to second base to ensure he too has warmed up his arm. And finally, placing the onus on hitters to restart the clock if they take a timeout. Hitters may call time once in at a bat. Previously, the clock was starting in 15 or 20 seconds when players stepped into the batter's box and were alert, leading pitchers to potentially hold the ball for long periods of time. Under the new guidelines, a player, regardless of where he is standing, must indicate to the umpire that he is ready to resume play, at which point the umpire will tell the operator to wind the clock. And that's your Armchair Quarterback Sports Flash. Stay tuned for Braves Country right here on WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, simulcasting on YouTube.com at Braves Country.
Hello there, Frazier.
Oh, what fresh hell is this?
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
It's the best in sports and entertainment. And get locked in and locked down with Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. with your host, me, Ryan O'Neill, each and every morning right here with the best in sports and entertainment, all the way from professional sports to college sports to River Dragons hockey and everything in between, including some of the very best local and national guests. It's the Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, right here on 99.1 FM WQEE.
Your true friends are the people in your life that totally get your inside jokes, your unique style, most important, what you want to eat.
Taco Bell knows that when you get together with your real friends, it doesn't matter what you're doing, but hey, it might as well be something that everybody can get into, like the taco and burrito cravings pack with four crunchy tacos and four beefy five-layer burritos. So even if you're all sitting around doing absolutely nothing, you know you'll still have a good time. It's Taco Bell's taco and burrito cravings pack. Get it for the friends that get it.
A shell?
Armchair.
10 years ago, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from maximum security stockade. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire...
Braves Country. WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key. And simulcasting on YouTube.com/@Braves Country.
Good afternoon, Mr. Justin Waller.
Good afternoon, and I don't know much, but I know one thing. Shohei Ohtani has an agent, and he's asking quadruple the price today.
You're in Braves country.
Welcome back. And one of my favorite days of the year when Justin and I do the NL East predictions. Next week we'll be in the weeds with doing all the season long predictions and whatnot. So today is NL East day. But before we get into that, man, that World Baseball Classic, that was something, wasn't it?
It was an amazing game. I would have liked to have seen the United States a little bit more patient. They did nothing with runners in scoring position, which kudos to Japan and their strategy and the way they attacked that lineup. They weren't scared. They went after hitters, and they kept them off balance all night. And anytime there was a threat, they just had timely defense and got out of it. So, hey, it was amazing to watch, and the showdown between Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout there at the end is, I mean, that's what we were all there for, wasn't it?
Yeah, and when you talk about the numbers, man, it blew the top off the numbers. They're still getting the exact numbers in for the U.S., but they're saying that Japan alone, they believe that it was somewhere between 75 and 80 million viewers. And that's saying something, because the game took place at like 5 in the morning over there. So people got up and ate breakfast and watched Shohei Ohtani do his thing.
You know, the sad thing is we're going to truly see how good Ohtani is this year, because the shift is off. And you saw it in the WBC, and they alluded to it during the broadcast last night. But how much higher are batting averages going to be this season? How many more runs are we going to see with the elimination of the shift? And what does that equate to?
Yeah, and here's something else that I dug into today. The USA versus Mexico game that was being played in Arizona, that game broke the attendance record for first round, okay? All throughout the WBC. So not just the games played in the U.S., but everywhere. 44,000 people attended that. The games for USA versus Puerto Rico and the USA versus Japan, the preliminary numbers are, and they're obviously cramming people in there on the rafters. 71,000 people were in that stadium last night. And yet, opening day, if the Marlins are at home, there will be 7,100 maybe. And the game with the USA versus Puerto Rico, what was that, Sunday night? 68,000. I don't know how they crammed them all in there, but man, that is – and for all these knuckleheads kept trying to say there wasn't any good for baseball and, you know, they don't want to see it. I'm like, what are you talking about? Here's another crazy stat. From 2017 to this year, the average attendance went up 24%.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's very impressive. And I mean, what do you mean there wasn't good for baseball last night? You saw Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout square off, and Mike Trout did nothing but shake his head and pretty much tip the cap and say, great pitch, because he blew heater after heater by him, and he knew what was coming. And that was a nasty slider he saved for the last, for the walk-off. I mean, it just, the bottom dropped out. And when you do that against the game's best, you are the best in the game. Listen, that's the show-off we wanted to see.
I didn't even know this number. Listen to this number. South Korea versus Japan last week? Viewership? That was just a, like a preliminary game, right? 70 million people watched it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And how is Fox not putting it on Fox? Quit putting it on FS1 and Fart Knocker 2 and everything else they put it. Put it. I guarantee you next go around, it's going to be on the Big Boy Network. They'd be foolish not to. Because that's one of the reasons why it's slow getting the U.S. numbers back, is because they're going off a streaming device and everything. But, man. That right there, that just tells you how big of a following this sport has globally, even though they want to try to tell you differently. ESPN will try to tell you that, baseball's in trouble, man. We got to do something about this sport. Nobody's watching it. Meanwhile, there's crickets on when you've got some, what they consider a big matchup on a Wednesday night NBA basketball. Or is it them or is it TNT doing a doubleheader of the NHL tonight? Okay, now granted, those are regular season games, but they'll make you think by their rhetoric on their daily shows that it's baseball that's in trouble, man. And you know, I've been pounding the table for years. Baseball's fine. Baseball's doing incredible. Globally, the viewership globally, not in the U.S., but globally, they're only behind soccer, and you're never going to catch soccer because it's played everywhere. So,
I mean, you could get more eyes on soccer if, like, every 10 minutes of no score, you threw a second or third ball out there and you created some offensive scoring, then, I mean.
I thought you were going to say boobs. If you just put boobs out there. I was like, yeah, probably.
I mean, I hadn't really thought that process out, but, yeah, I think it would work. It's got to be better than the nil-nil that they end some games in.
Here's another thing. This is eye-opening. In Puerto Rico, what was there? Puerto Rico versus the Dominican Republic had an average of the 62% of the country of the two countries' television watching audience. Okay. Here's a bigger number that really surprises me. Of those 62% that watched it in those countries, Dominican and Puerto Rico, 55%, and this is the number they always want, were under the age of 35 in female viewers. You know what that means? Next World Baseball Classic, them boys are going to wear some really tight pants.
Also, they were already tight last night.
Yeah. Well, they're going to be like 1980s gym shorts.
Trying to think of the pitcher for the Dodgers that we joked on in the World Series. I think it was the COVID series. Bueller. Yes.
Bueller. Yeah. Where he was wearing the high tops. Man, what was I watching? It was a March Madness. I don't even remember which channel because they carried on so many. But this cat that was hosting the pregame or postgame or in-game, dude, he had a suit that was painted on him and then high waters up about halfway to his shins.
Yeah, that's starting to become a thing. I notice I see that more and more. And I'm not really going to dive on the fashion world. I know you like to, you know, delve in that world a little bit. But you won't catch me in high waters. And you're not going to catch me in anything skinny jean related either. Well, one, once you get to a certain waist size, and if it starts with a 4, it's an oxymoron to be called a skinny jean if you've got a waist size that starts with a 4.
My point was, this guy wasn't skinny. Now, he didn't look like he was some big fat butt. He looked like he was jacked, and I'm sure that's why he was wearing it. And maybe in person, it didn't look as weird as it did, but on TV, it was weird, man. I was like, why is this guy supposed to be hosting a show, which normally the hosts of these television shows are supposed to be revered for their knowledge and whatnot. And he looks like he's dressed like what I would assume that, I don't know, eighth graders probably dress right now. Right. And we all know goofy things go in and out of style. We were once that age, whatever, but you don't get on national television and wear it. I'm pretty sure Walter Cronkite wasn't getting into the CBS News in the 70s wearing bell bottoms, you know, in a pimp hat. It's like, what are you doing, man? What in the world are you doing? But anyways, let's go ahead and did you have anything else to add to the World Baseball Classic? The only thing I have to add is I can't wait for 2026.
I'm ready for the next one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great tournament. I love that baseball puts it on. And I wish more people got into it. I mean, it's almost like the adult version of the Little League World Series. And it's just fun to watch.
It is. It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal, phenomenal entertainment. Whether you're a huge baseball fan or not. And the thing is, it's so short, you don't have to get emotionally invested into it. It lasts like 3 weeks. So you don't have to like go out of your way to, and I know a lot of people waited till the final rounds to watch it. That's fine. But if you missed out on what the US and other countries were doing it was either Friday or Saturday that the final rounds began all the way to last night, man, you missed. If you're a sports fan, you cheated yourself.
I tell you what we got cheated on last night was the exit velocity numbers on that Schwarber home run. Them foul balls were dinging.
That was
on a rope, and you don't see many upper decker line drives like that. That was a phenomenal shot, and
that was impressive. And I don't even remember what they said. What was the length of that, but I felt like it was shortchanged. Because if the number didn't start with 600 and something, I was like, dude, I'm telling you right now, I went farther than that. Like, ridiculous.
That ball was nowhere near slowing down, and I don't even know if it hit its apex when it was caught in the upper deck. It was still climbing.
What was funny about it is you felt it coming. You're like, all these at once, you kept fouling off, like, dude, you're gonna mess around and find out. And he did. He laid one in there. He tried to throw a splitter that didn't. I always think of that 61 movie. Splitter? Yeah. It didn't split, though.
It split all right between the second and third deck.
It split his pants as he was walking off the mound going, man. The biggest disappointment for that home run is that there wasn't someone on base to tie the game.
True. But,
man, it was cool that Ohtani versus Trout to end it. I would have loved to have seen Trout get the better of him. You know, not necessarily a home run, but I would have loved to see him at least get a base hit and extend it and see what could have happened. Because I do believe that if we would have had a little more patience against Ohtani, that we would have gotten a run off of him because he was kind of all over the place. And I don't know why we didn't get, you know, some sort of a throughout the entire game, not necessarily just that inning, we didn't get pinch hitting. And, dude, you had some sticks on that bench.
How many superstars is it going to take to move Ohtani? What is the haul for him after you saw that last night? It went up, correct? I mean, it only went up in value.
Buster Olney said this morning that he thought the number was going to be over $600 million. I think he's shortchanging that, man. It would not shock me if Ohtani put the B word out there. Whoa. $1 billion. Whoa. Now, how many years does he have left? But I think he's at least $750 million because he can do both things. It's not that because he's the best.
Yeah, you're getting a starting pitcher. You're getting a DH.
Evidently, you're getting a closer.
Yeah, I mean, and the man can come after warming up twice, coming back out of he didn't warm up, but he was in the pen running back and forth and still be mentally sound enough to face the lineup he faced, and it didn't break a sweat.
He did what I talked about, I don't know, 3 years ago when they first started, 3-4 years ago when they first started talking about this. I think that's where he belongs. He should be the closer focus as the DH, be the closer, and you bring him in the end, and then when he finally comes in the end, because of the Ohtani rule, he can still hit. He doesn't have to leave. They put that in, what, 2 years ago? Maybe it's been 3 years ago. But they put the Ohtani rule in. We're used to, if you put him in to pitch, then he's done at DH. But they called it the Ohtani rule, and that's no longer the case.
So, yeah, I think I agree. It's going to be a massive haul. I don't know how you put the amount of superstars you give up or the cash that you throw out there, but.
If nothing else, you know that you've got a starter for at least the next 5 to 6 years. And then if he starts to fade, then you can always put him in the bullpen.
You know, he'll just get bored and change arms and throw from that side because he'll do something crazy next.
Yeah, if he ends up getting Tommy John surgery, he'll just become a sidewinding left-hander. Yeah. The guy is special. People are like, who's the next Ohtani? Let's calm down, because everyone
has to enjoy the one we have right now first, please.
Yeah, we went 100 years between Babe Ruth and Ohtani. Let's calm down about who's the next.
Can we just get him in our time zone so we can watch him more? Can we just get him
Easterly? I'd be impressed.
Is all I'm asking.
I'd be impressed if we got a kid to make the. So I'm watching the replay of the Braves game. And I see this guy named, what's his name? Trey Riley come onto the mound. I saw the name Riley on the back of his jersey and he's pitching. And I was like, oh, we got something here. Not to mention the fact the kid's got like a mullet that's in a rubber band, but he's got a Strider mustache. I mean, how do you not pull for this guy? I want to see this guy in Atlanta someday. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, predictions. National League East are next. Who's going to win the East and by how many games? We'll be back in a flash here on Braves Country and Braves Country HD, wherever you stream. Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, it's Braves versus Mets right here on Braves Country HD. Atlanta Braves. Spring training is winding down and important roster spots will be decided. Make sure to drop in and catch Braves Country. Spring training baseball right here on Braves Country HD, wherever you stream. Like and subscribe today. We're bringing you over 100 broadcasts in total in every game throughout the playoffs. That's Braves Mets, Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Braves Country HD.
Here's good news. There's still a need for hundreds of thousands of cybersecurity professionals in the U.S. right now. And My Computer Career is training people to help meet the demand. No IT experience? No problem. Take the free career evaluation today. Start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. Grants covering up to 53% of the cost are available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu.
Hey folks, this is Mark White with The Mark White Show, and you can tune in to The Mark White Show every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on Rock 99 WQEE The Key, the home of Southern sports and talk.
The decision to have the kids earn their jersey numbers, Is there a story behind that, and what are you hoping that
be? I'm old school. Anybody over 45, didn't we have to earn every darn thing we got? Ain't nobody gave us nothing. So this whole new thing. First of all, we got this new thing now in college football about double numbers. We didn't have. If somebody gave you a double number in college, that assured that you weren't gonna play. that's how it was, wasn't it? Now it's like normal. You gotta earn stuff. Ain't nobody giving you nothing. We got kids that ain't played a snap, you know. And you want to be one? You know what number one meant back in the day for us? That you were that one. Now you got number one getting a frame toe out of him out there on the field. Like, come on, you got to be crazy.
Armchair.
Welcome back to Braves Country. Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks, weekdays, 3 to 5 p.m., drive time on WQEE.
Colorado head coach Deion Sanders addressing media
past week. The reason why he recorded it, made it a part of our clips going forward, though my favorite part of his, he got him getting the frame torn out of him. I hadn't heard that term in years, and I was just dying laughing. I was waiting for someone to bring up, well, then why were you two at Florida State? Was there who was better than you? I would have loved to have heard that response. But, man, I can't help but pull for Colorado, man. He's really likable. He's old school. Did you see the clip the other day where he walked in to the weight room? And I guess it's probably because the Colorado Buffaloes colors are black and gold. One kid was in the weight room lifting. He was lifting weights. He was doing what he was supposed to do. But he wasn't wearing black sweat socks. He's wearing white sweat socks. And he just walked in real nonchalantly, and he named the kid's name, whatever his name is. We'll just call him Smith. He goes, Smith, get out of here, man. You can't be in here with black socks. I mean, with white socks. And he just kept walking. So, I mean, he's making these kids show up in a uniform. Down the road, that's going to pay off for these kids, whether it's football or non-football related.
Yeah, it's that professional mindset that it goes back to that earning it. And it was a mindset for those that are in our age group. You earned everything you got. We're not handing out numbers here. Well said, Dion. Well said.
I'm sure he's over there thinking to himself, me, you talking about practice. What'd you say? Yeah, kick rocks. And what was funny was Patino. So I played his clip right before you came on last hour. And I do believe that he's going to build something at St. John's. You're talking about NIL in New York City. And that's the hub of high school basketball. But he said something that was very Dion-like. And I think you're going to start getting this as a, I'm not saying every new head coach is going to do this, but you're going to see it become a thing because of the NIL and everything. He said something very Dion-like, where he said, a lot of these kids who are here right now, let's be honest, they're not going to be here this coming fall because they're not going to fit my scheme. That's the nicest way he can say it. Basically, it's like, dude, we didn't make the NCAA tournament. You think I'm bringing this roster back? All right, let's get into the National League East. I'm going to pull up the Pecota rankings would be the best ones to go off of. Go to standings, whatever they call them. Go to projections. All right. And you give me a second to pull these up. Real quick, before we get into the standings, who is your National League MVP this year?
I'm going to go with Trey Turner. I think you putting him in the Phillies lineup, he's going to have more steals this year. I think you have better offensive performance with no shift. We've seen he's hot in the WBC. It's not like he needs to get into form. So I'm going to go Trey Turner to get his first MVP.
I have that exact same name written down. First of all, he plays in a big market, and I think it's really difficult to win MVP if you're not in a big market and you're not in a contender. And, of course, he just signed that big deal, so he's already on everybody's mind. Then he did what he did in the WBC. If he gets off to a hot start, he's going to be really – right now, he's the leader in the clubhouse, and the season hasn't even started. So I definitely believe – let me get this out of the way. I definitely believe that this is what we can expect there. And then looking at, I can move these up and down. Looking at I cannot believe, so this is updated for today. The Mets are still the favorite on the Pecota standing, but this is not what you're seeing in Vegas. Vegas does not believe this. If you think you're getting this number in Vegas, you're sadly mistaken. Oops. The line in Vegas, I saw it the other day, and I believe it's somewhere around the number of the Mets were, I think, 93
394.5 wins. Right now it's showing 94 on Pocota, and Atlanta was just above them at like 96, I think, or maybe it was 95.5. And then the Phillies were 89.5. They creeped up because they were 87.5 weeks ago when I first looked at it. I still think they're underselling the Phillies.
I think you can throw all that away. That's useless. The Mets will be closer to the Nationals than they will be the Phillies. Just put that out there. We've seen it historically over the years of baseball. It doesn't matter what type of checks you write. Spending money doesn't win championships. It can help you. It can put you in a contender position where you should win them. But how many have we seen go out and try and buy championships? Has the Padres won one yet?
Yeah.
I mean, where are we?
Now,
I don't get it.
They did make the NL.
They did.
The NLCS last year, to be fair.
They did do that, but they did not get a championship ring for that payroll. And how many times have we seen the Yankees roster not make it through? And we look at what they've spent on their roster, or the Dodgers before they finally come around and got that one in the bubble. It's just been over and over. We've seen where I don't know that payroll's end all be all in the game of baseball. There are a lot of things that happen in this lengthy season. So if I'm going to rank them out, 1A, 1B, I take the Mets and take your ranking, and maybe I put them in front of Miami. I'm still not sold that Miami's not coming in third, but I've got Philly and Atlanta. I'm split right there in the rankings. I don't know. One's 1A, one's 1B. I'm going to say since Trey Turner's being added and he's hot and Mike Soroka may or may not be close to ready at the start, first month of the season, I'm going to go advantage Philly, so I'll give them the 0.2 lead that you see there in the 90.1 versus 89.9 projected wins. We'll go Phillies first, Atlanta second, and put the Mets and Marlins really battling it out for third and fourth place, and then Washington trailing up the rear. Miami might be a sleeper. The young stud that's on the cover of the show, and I'm breaking the golden rule. Names escaping me right now, but we only got to see the young man play 60 games for the Marlins last year. He's moved to center field, and I mean, the kid's a superstar.
Every broadcaster's nightmare of a name, Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah.
If you flip flop those, the J and the CH in front of each name, you'll understand why I'm saying that. And I've actually heard several of these professional announcers actually mess that last name up. It's one thing if you do it on accident. I'm not going to do it on purpose. But so who is your NL Cy Young winner? Is it coming out of our division, or is it?
It is, and it's coming off of our team. And I'm going to try and pull this up so I don't lose myself and I can talk about it. But I'm going to go Strider. I think he should have won. He could have won, aside from Harris, Rookie of the Year last year. And he had double-digit wins. He struck out over 200 batters, and he had a sub-2.8 ERA in his first year in the bigs. And he builds off that. Those are Cy Young winning numbers. So
I cannot believe that the two of us have the same exact. I almost went Max Fried, but everything you just said, Strider, at the strikeouts, he's becoming a cult phenomenon with the mustache, right? That counts when it comes to voting. It really does. In a second year, assuming they don't put any kind of restrictions on, which they shouldn't, man, the sky is the limit for him. I mean, I could see 250, 300 strikeouts for him this year.
I absolutely see the same. I think he brings, and I think if I'm not mistaken, I know it's been over 20 years, and it's probably closer to 25 since Atlanta's had a Cy Young winner. It's been a while.
Yeah, because it was the big three. We've had some pretty good years from pitchers over the last 20-something years, but the last one I'm thinking it. It wasn't Smoltz, was it? Was it Glavin? I'm trying to remember the exact.
I mean, we only got one other option.
Yeah, Maddox won his in a row, and Smoltz won his. I think it's Glavin, but let me double check that. I've got it in my head where I can't remember which came first. I think
that was an amazing performance for a rookie, and the double digit wins. I think, the strikeouts are great and they're amazing, but that means he's getting depth. He's getting long enough to give credit for the win, and he's in a great situation when he leaves. They're not undecided games. He has done his job. It was, and as a rookie, was it 98?
It was Glavin 98, Smoltz 96. Yeah. I thought that's how that went down because, for whatever reason, I always remember Smoltz 96. It's just burned into my brain. Speaking of that, we haven't talked about this. So I guess you stumbled across that 98 Braves song, huh?
I did. Ran into that this morning. Somehow wound up in a playlist. First time I had heard that off of that album. And it was kind of a funny song. It was a letdown year for the Braves. In my mind, that's one of the – I mean, we had a Cy Young winner. We had a roster stacked top to bottom, and I think we were down 3-0 to the Padres, came back and won 2, but lost that series 4-2. And I mean, just what a disappointing end to a season that you really thought they were going to put it together, get to that fifth World Series, and maybe salvage the 90s and have 2 wins out of all of our appearances. But it didn't happen.
Of all the years, is that the one that you point to as being the most disappointed one?
Or do you I'm still Bert Hutter about 2012 and all the Cardinal fans, so bring it on. That infield fly rule was garbage. And I'm still upset about that. We had runners first and second. Should have been bases loaded with one out. And we were down 3. We would have put runs on the board. That was a game changer. And instead, you're, first and second with 2 outs, innings over, and BS garbage call. That's the one that I'm still – 2012 wild card game. Plus, it was the first year of the one-year wild card play-in. We won that division. We had a 6-game lead, and you would have been into the divisional series with the previous year's rules. So it was a double whammy of this is stupid. The whole game of baseball is played the entire year on the principle of winning series. You don't have to win every game, but you want to win the series. That's how you win out in the long run, and that's what you focus on as a team. But now we're going to, after the entire length of a season, go to a 1-game play-in. Who came up with that garbage?
See, the year that I always go back to that we should have won, that it would have made more sense for him to write the song about, is 96, because we were in the World Series against the Yankees. Tell me that wouldn't make a great country song. And we were up 2-0, and we were leading in game 3. And then Jim Leyritz happened. Yeah. And that's always going to be the game that I point. Now, I'll tell you what, the year after that, 97, if you want to pick one where we didn't make the World Series, that was horse crap too. Because that was the year where Eric Gregg's strike zone, when Levon Hernandez was pitching, was the size of the state of Texas. But when Maddox was up on the mound, it looked like Delaware. So but maybe some of the names rhymed better. Maybe that's why I don't know why.
I give 97, I guess, a little bit of a pass because it was the first year of Turner Field after coming out of Fulton County Stadium. And I don't know, maybe it was just the newness factor. I kind of watched that one. But 98, like, that was the end. You know, you go back to that season with my college football fan. Like, my teams were on top. Like, that was the one I really thought I might get a double dip in the same year, but not to be.
And I guess 96 always sticks out to me, too, not only because it was against the Yankees, but because we were going to be back-to-back champs. And, like I said, then Jim Leyritz happened in the rest of history. And we couldn't buy a victory. And that's the one that's always bothered me. That's the one. I still think that team should have won 2 or 3 more World Series, but that's the one that I'm always pointing to going, God, what were we doing? And it's not like 91. I mean, my God, he couldn't have written an entire album over the 91 season. We go worst to first. And then lose to the stupid Twins in the bottom of the 11th inning, or was the bottom of the 10th inning. And I still say that Lonnie Smith was safe. They pushed him off the bag. That was gosh. I'll see that game pop up every once in a while, and I have to watch it all the way to that moment. Now, I don't stay till the very end with that fly ball that would have been caught, but it wouldn't have mattered because the guy was going to tag from third. I can't even look at that. But my NL East predictions, I'm going once again with the Atlanta Braves, man. To be the man, I think you got to beat the man. And I understand your logic picking the Phillies. My biggest thing with the Braves is I think our pitching is much better. Now, their offense is stacked top to bottom. If you don't think that's true, then why didn't we have any guys in the WBC on the U.S. roster? But I guarantee you, about halfway through that, DeRosa was looking over going, dude, we should have had old Matt Olson playing first because he's been hammering the ball this spring. But I've got to put the Braves in that 90. Where they have them? Okay, so we'll go with the argument that the team winning the division is 94 wins because I don't have the Mets there that high. I think Atlanta is going to get right around that mark, probably a hair past it, but I'm talking about barely 95, 96 type wins. And they're going to need every bit of it to beat out the Phillies. I think Philadelphia is going to be the second team. And the Mets are going to be affected by that Diaz injury, but I don't think they're just going to fall off the planet. But I'm seeing more like 85 wins, which is going to be a huge disappointment for Mets fans. But that's not saying that 85 wins can't get you that last wild card, because it's going to be a mess at that bottom. The Nationals, the over-under in Vegas is 59. Pocota is at 61. I don't see how they get to 61 victories. I just don't. They've got nothing. They got like Joni Meneses, I think is how I pronounce his name. And I saw him last year. I was impressed. And when we're doing fantasy rankings, I looked at him this year and go, I didn't know this guy's 31. He's having a breakout year at 31. I was like, there's not much of a chance that's going to last, man. So this guy didn't have a breakout campaign. This guy just got hot for 2 weeks is what he did. So there's nothing on Washington. Now, of course, we start the season off with and watch them sweep us like the freaking Reds almost did. But Miami's going to be competitive. I think they're going to have more punch. And Miami and Vegas right now, 76 to 76 and a half wins. I think they're going to get above that because man, their starting pitching is there, but their offense is just such a big question mark. But that would be, so I would have Atlanta first, Philly second, Mets third, and you've got Philly, Atlanta, and the Mets.
But I mean, I'm identical to you in that I've got them in two groups. I've got Mets and Miami close right together, same, and splitting hairs over Philadelphia and Atlanta.
Yeah, I think Miami will be impressive, but I just, first of all, the Mets are going to have the money to go make the moves at the deadline, and Cohen will try, whereas the Marlins will be selling off. So that's why I have no faith that my – so I don't know if I would actually take the bet in Vegas of them going over the 76 or 77 win mark, whatever it was, but I have more faith in it. Because I would not take the Mets getting over 94 and a half wins. In fact, I'm probably going to bang the under on that before the season starts. I mean, come on. How are they going to get there? They're going to be within five or six wins of what they did last year. They don't have DeGrom, and now they don't have Diaz. I don't care what anyone says. Diaz is the best closer in baseball when healthy. So he's an automatic W when he walks out of that bullpen. He had 31 saves last year. I'm really surprised he was only used that much. But that means those were 31 automatic wins coming out of the bullpen. You're like, hey, it's over. And towards the end, if you remember, they used him two or three times. I mean, handful of times they would use him for two innings plus. So that's, but anyways, let's take our last quick break. When we come back, little March Madness action. I talk about them Vols, and I got a clip to play for you from Ben Roethlisberger. You're going to like this one. We'll be back in a flash here on Braves Country and Braves Country HD, wherever you stream. Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, it's Braves versus Mets right here on Braves Country HD. Atlanta Braves spring training is winding down, and important roster spots will be decided. Make sure to drop in and catch Braves Country spring training baseball right here on Braves Country HD, wherever you stream. Like and subscribe today. We're bringing you over 100 broadcasts in total in every game throughout the playoffs. That's Braves Mets, Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Braves Country HD.
Hockey season, and that means new merch over at ourdragonsmerch.com. Get the latest designs and some of our fun new souvenirs ahead of what's sure to be a great hockey season. Celebrate another season of River Dragons hockey by getting a new look to wear on game days, or surprise the big-time sports fan in your life with a new keepsake that will make them a River Dragons fan for life. Order online right now at ourdragonsmerch.com. That's the letter R, dragonsmerch.com. We'll see you at the rink.
It's the best in sports and entertainment. And get locked in and locked down with Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. with your host, me, Ryan O'Neill, each and every morning right here with the best in sports and entertainment, all the way from professional sports to college sports to River Dragons hockey and everything in between, including some of the very best local and national guests. It's the Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, right here on 99.1 FM WQEE.
I am definitely down for some rock climbing.
Yeah, me too. I am down. I am totally down. Lock me down.
Cool. So, what do you say we climb a rock mañana?
Mañana might be a problem. I'm supposed to have a boil lanced mañana. You know, I think they charge me if I cancel with only one mañana's notice.
Welcome back. Time for our locks. Before we get into that, March Madness. Tennessee Volunteers going to be taking on FAU. We got Bama still in the hunt. We got Arkansas. I'm really looking forward to that Arkansas-UConn game. I think that's going to be a bloodbath. Is it Charles Barkley said the other night? That's a grown man game. Those guys going to be knocking into each other and elbows and everything. But before we get into all that basketball, I've got to play this clip for you. Been saving it all show. I wanted to start this off, but I was like, nah, I gotta get Waller's reaction to this. This was Ben Roethlisberger. God, I don't know. I don't even remember what show it was on. Anyways, he went on some podcast or something like that. And talking about, remember when going into the final playoff games for the 49ers and Purdy. Was it Purdy getting hurt? It could have been Purdy getting hurt because Purdy got hurt. I guess it was right before Purdy took over, right? And the 49er quarterback situation, I guess it's when Jimmy G got hurt. And I remember the rumor, but I thought it was BS. He says he actually did talk to the 49ers. Here's the clip.
I would say this. Last year, there were some truths to the Niners thing, just in the sense that they were, I think, reaching out for some, just to maybe gauge my interest. Even though they had a great chance, I think, to win a Super Bowl, it would have been hard for me to go try to win a Super Bowl anywhere else but here. So at the end of the day, it was the smallest little bleep in my heart to go play again.
Can you imagine the earth-shattering, ground-shaking news that would have been if he would have signed up with the 49ers late in the season? I mean, first of all, what kind of shape is he in? But he gets off the couch and goes, wins the Super Bowl with the Niners. Oh, how happy the Steeler fans would be with that.
I think the 49ers have found out that they're probably glad they didn't have that decision made.
Yeah, well,
they found a quarterback.
They did. I'm sure midway through the second quarter, they were thinking, man, we should have signed Roethlisberger. the second quarter of the Philadelphia game is what I'm referring to. He got his arm blown off about midway through the first. And then, well, I guess it was at the end of the second quarter when Josh Johnson decided to play tiddlywinks with the football and kick it all around the field. And next thing you know, like, well, that's it. There's my ticket in the trash. But that, man, that would have been something. That would have been something. I don't know what it probably would have been a whole lot of, well, I say it would have been something. It would have been something leading up to the game, and then you see him play, and he may have looked retired when he went out there on the field, but it at least would have been a fun thing to talk about. All right, so March Madness. Tonight you got a couple of NIT games, and you got the NHL has only two games. You got a handful of games in the NBA. So honestly, it's kind of a slow night in the world of sports. But you've got tomorrow night, let's go, Sweet 16 begins, and the Vols and FAU, right now the Vols are a 5.5-point favorite. And other lines tomorrow, you got UConn's a 4-point favorite, Michigan State. I'm surprised Michigan State is a 1.5-point favorite over Kansas State, who's a much higher seed. And then the Zags are getting 1.5 against UCLA. So what are the Vols going to do, Justin?
Well, I'm going to give you my lock. I'm going to take the under in the Tennessee game. It was at 130.5, and hopefully it hasn't moved too far or it's gone up. But as long as it's somewhere in that vicinity on your screen, that's where I'm going to go with my lock. Hopefully play great defense, and they find another shooter to stay hot. And it rotates through, and maybe they keep this magical run going. If I'm being honest, I did not see the performance going against Duke the way that it went. That was a pretty impressive win. They played gritty defense and controlled the boards, and that in their favor, Vescovi was hot, and other players when needed be. They had a shooter step up. That hasn't been the case down the stretch for Tennessee, and they let some games get away that you have to ask yourself, you know, just left your head scratching. But somehow, some way, they've put it together for two games. Let's see if they can put it together for a couple more.
Yeah, I did not expect that either. I thought it would be a close game. I thought Duke would find a way, but I'm going to tell you right now, I felt like he got outcoached. Shire? I think he flat out got outcoached. And I know it's first season being head coach at Duke, so they're going to give him a pass. But they played Tennessee much better when they were man-to-man. They kept going into that 2-3 zone, and Tennessee was just carving them up. And I kept watching this. I was like, man, all right, all right. He's not changing it? All right, here we go, here we go. I hate the fact that Tennessee and FAU are playing each other, because those are the two teams that I've been pulling for, just because, you know, living down here and then, of course, have lived up in Tennessee. Just, you know, they're cool, two very good stories. I'm going to pull for the Vols, but I'll be, you know, surrounded by people telling me that I'm a jerk for doing it. It's kind of disappointing that game's being played in Madison Square Garden, because I do think that's an advantage Tennessee, though, if I really think about it, because I feel like the Orange Army is going to follow and travel to Madison Square Garden before FAU. I can't imagine that there's a lot of FAU basketball heads who are going to drop what they're doing on, because this really is a moment's notice. This isn't some game that you can save up for and plan ahead. Then you have to decide you're just going to go fly up or drive up from wherever you're at, probably somewhere in Florida, go all the way to Madison Square Garden, New York. Either that, or there's just going to be a lot of St. John's fans in the stadium wearing Rick Pitino shirts.
Recruiting with NIL deals.
Yeah, exactly. That line, I'm not touching that game tomorrow, but if I was going to, I'd probably take FAU plus the points, just because I feel like this is going to be a really good game. I do think Tennessee's going to, now that I've watched that team play without their star 3 or 4 games now and like really watched them, that defense is going to hold up. I think they're going to win, but I don't know if 5.5 can be covered.
Yeah, I'm staying away from the points. Individually, I think it'll be a lower scoring game, and it'll have to be for Tennessee to come out victorious. And that's why I like the under in that game.
I mentioned it earlier, my lock of the day, and actually the line's changed, so I'll take it. Vanderbilt is getting a point and a half. It was a pick'em this morning. Vanderbilt's getting a point and a half. I'm going to take the Commodores at home in the NIT against UAB. I know a lot of people are jumping on UAB, but man, Vandy has been tough to beat the last 2 months, and they're at home. I feel like they're going to have a pretty decent crowd. That's the one game. If there's one game I am watching tonight, it's that one. I don't know if I'm watching anything else. I might tune into the Cincinnati-Utah Valley game, but regular season NBA and hockey just are not interesting me right now. I'm so ready for that to be in the playoffs. Are you watching your Preds as much as you used to?
Now that I have access to them, I try. Coming off a murderous 7-0 loss to the Rangers and then bouncing back against the Sabres 7-2 night before last makes me feel a little bit better. When you have a touchdown scored against you in hockey, you're a little bit deflated. So
let me ask you something. The next morning after the Predators got pounded by the Rangers, right? Mm-hmm. I was watching Boomer and Geo, and Boomer, who's a huge, huge hockey fan, a huge Rangers fan, he was kind of scoffing at it, saying, well, we were basically playing a glorified, I can't remember the term he used, but basically if it was a baseball term, it would be a AAA hockey team.
I mean, you pretty much have their AHL affiliate on the ice. Just injuries and off-season trades with the announcement David Poole stepping down as the general manager. Barry Trotz is coming in as the new general manager. Essentially, you're rewriting and resetting for the new GM to come in and have some options to point this roster and team in the direction that they want to go.
Well, then how in the world, if that's the case, then how in the world are they sitting there in the middle of the Western Conference?
Just grit and great goaltending. And I say that laughably after they gave up 7 to the Rangers. But, I mean, it has been good defense in front of them. And they've just been gritty, scrappy team. They've scored on power plays when they've had opportunities. Just timely situational hockey, I guess, is the way to say how they're in the mix of it. Is it explainable? No, but sometimes these weird things just happen. I don't think it'll be, even if they do, a deep run or
a very long run. I guess right now they're on the outside looking in on the Western Conference Plus, but it's not by much. It just surprised me for him to use that kind of language, basically calling them a scrub. And I was like, wait a minute, did I miss something? And I looked down and I was like, well, it's not like they've got like 50 points at this point in the season. I mean, they're sitting there at 78. The last team, if I'm counting this upright, has 83, which is the Jets.
It just surprised me.
We're coming up on time. What is your walk-off?
Well, I'm going to do, since I will miss next week, the World Series predictions, so you can laugh at me when I'm hilariously long wrong. But I think we get a rematch, unfortunately. And I'm going to stick with it, Astros and Phillies. I think the Phillies find a way back in, and I just don't know that anybody did enough this offseason to dethrone the Astros in the AL. But could be completely wrong. The way that this season in defense will play could be the difference maker. So,
all right, well, we got a jam, brother. We'll see you next time. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow, remember, 105 First Pitch right here on Braves Country HD will be on WQEE at 2 p.m. We'll see ya.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Guys and gals, it's time to go. We'll see you on the next show.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thanks for listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks on 99.1 FM WQEE, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Braves Country comes your way weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Please follow, like, and subscribe today. Armchair Quarterback Radio, your first choice for Southern sports.
Something of the 5th of September. Something of the 5th of September. She said a lot that I can't remember. Something of the 5th. Can I get another cigarette, please? Can I get another cigarette, please? Yeah, I know I live to regret it. Just give me another cigarette, please. Ha! Ha!
You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia. Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, it's Braves versus Mets right here on Braves Country HD. Atlanta Braves spring training is winding down and important roster spots will be decided. Make sure to drop in and catch Braves Country spring training baseball right here on Braves Country HD, wherever you stream. Like and subscribe today. We're bringing you over 100 broadcasts in total in every game throughout the playoffs. That's Braves Mets, Thursday, March 23rd, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Braves Country HD.